Welcome to the Beeson Podcast, coming to you from Beeson Divinity School on the campus of Samford University. Now your host, Doug Sweeney.
Welcome to the Beeson Podcast. I'm your host, Doug Sweeney, and I'm joined today by my good friend, and I'm proud to say Beeson alumnus, Pastor Cameron Thomas, who serves the Hutchison Missionary Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. Pastor Thomas just finished preaching this morning in chapel. Wonderful sermon that we'll link you to when we drop the podcast recording. Just finished speaking to the Minority Student Fellowship. That was a wonderful time as well. And just when he thought we were going to let him rest, drive back home or work on his sermon for Sunday or something else, I said, hey, Pastor Thomas, please come and be a guest on the Beeson Podcast. Great to have you with us, Cam.
Thank you. Thank you, Dean Sweet.
Let's, some of the people listening know you already, Beeson alums who listen and so on, but not everybody's going to know you, so let's just introduce you to them. Can you tell us just a little bit about how you were raised, how you came to faith, how you learned that the Lord wanted you to be a pastor?
Yeah, no, Dean Sweeney, thanks again for this opportunity and time together. I'm so appreciative of the opportunity to be back home at Beeson Divinity School. I'm undeserving but not ungrateful, and really grateful for hospitality today. My story begins in a small town called Goodwater, Alabama, about 900 people there, I think, in the most recent census. City with, one red light, about 14, 15 stop signs. And with that, I grew up in a small church, Hatchet Spring Baptist Church, there in Goodwater, and really just developed this desire to know God, love God, as a result of just the amazing church community, but also family experience as well. I don't remember a time of me not being in church. My baptism certificate displays that I was baptized at 2.5 years old.
Is that right? In a Baptist church?
In a Baptist church. Well. It wouldn't be no baptism or anything of that sort. So, but in doing that, people say, did you get baptized again? No, I didn't. But I really believe, Dean, that that was really a moment in which God planted a seed. And over the past 30 plus years now, been growing and developing that. So with that, I've started preaching at the tender age of 14 years old. I had just made my high school basketball team when I was getting ready. Yeah, craziest thing. And so with that, it was the first Sunday in December, December the 3rd, and at our little country church. And I had spoken before around community in town, but this was my first sermon, and it was kind of crazy. My first sermon was centered around the text when Abraham's had the experience with the handmaid servant Hagar, and she's out in the wilderness.
Wow.
And so, yeah,
for a
first sermon, yeah. And so, in looking at that, really just display God's faithfulness. It was there. I started preaching, and ever since that day, God has graced me to be able to not only preach, try to preach rather, but just have a burning desire and love for His church out of my tradition.
What was that when you were 14?
Yeah,
and you were in the pulpit preaching a sermon for the first time. What was that experience like? Was this a church? Kind of a small town church. Everybody knew you, loved you. They kind of sensed that the Lord had His hand on you, and they were just cheering you on. Or were you just scared to death? Or what was it like?
All of those things. So once again, Goodwater, small town. But I had spoken at other churches before in the local community, and so people were coming really to support and see what it is that God would do. I did not know that night I would be introduced to an opportunity for theological education through a non-traditional capacity. It was a local church, Jehovah Jireh Ministries, had a Bible Institute that was there. Let me tell you, a lady and her husband owned the local Christian bookstore, for heaven's sakes bookstore in Alexander City. She was responsible. It's the craziest thing, Miss Jackie and her husband. They brought me my license And they brought the license because they had to order it from the Christian bookstore. You know, not many preachers were coming out. So they were there, and it was that night they decided that if I was going to go to school, their desire was to support me.
Wow.
Yeah, at the local Bible Institute. So I'm 14, playing basketball in high school and also going to, seminary as much as I knew it was back then. So, yeah.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
And on top of that, Dean, I was 14, so I couldn't drive. So another local pastor, Pastor James R. Duke McCoy, pastor of St. John AME Church in Sopatoy, Alabama. It's crazy, even smaller than Goodwater, right next to it. My grandmother was driving me to seminary, to the classes at the church. He was going. He said, well, I've got to go myself, and I got to pass by your house, so I'll take you to class. Either on Saturday morning, taking me to class for seminary. My ministerial experience is a testament to the grace of God. Mm. That people all along the way, even before Sam University, before Beeson Vintage School, before anything else, God has placed people in my life that have not only affirmed, but also literally were the hands and feet of Jesus for me to be who I am.
Mm. That's marvelous. Every once in a while, I'm in conversations with pastors and ministry leaders now where I'll find myself saying things like, I wish we had more older church people who were kind of looking out for the young people, you know, who've been appropriately gifted by the Lord. Lord's hand is on them. They're ready and eager to grow in ministry. It's not that it doesn't happen. It does happen today, and that's wonderful. Yeah. But there are a lot more stories I know about personally of it happening a generation ago than I hear about it happening today.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right, so I happen to know, because I'm your friend, you went to Samford.
I did,
How'd you get to Samford University?
I came to Samford University on a whim and a prayer. So in that, a local pastor who was responsible for me being introduced to expository preaching, Pastor Melvin Irvin, whose daughter attended Samford University. He was there that night that I preached my first sermon. He pastored my paternal family's church. So my dad's side of the family, he was there and supporting all those kind of things. And he had a conversation with me, and he said, if you are serious about God's call on your life, you need to go to school and study to be the best preacher you could be. So in doing that, business was not an option for me. You know, math was not an option for me. You know, accounting, none of things of that sort. I came to Samford University to be a preacher. Mm. That's all I wanted to be.
Were you a Bible major?
Yes, I was a religion major.
Yeah.
So appreciative to department chair at that time, Dr. Ken Roxborough, Dr. Joseph Scribner, who taught me undergrad Hebrew Bible, and my mentor, Dr. James R. Jim Barnett, who's going to be with the Lord now, was department chair, and he was directing this program called the Pre-Ministerial Scholars Program. And in him leading that program, I did not get in as a freshman coming into Samford. Very prestigious program. It was okay. Samford was the first place I experienced rejection. Many people don't know it.
All right. Well, I bet it was good for you.
It happened, yeah. It was definitely a good piece of the humble pie. But in doing that, came back a year and a half later, and he was like, hey, want to extend this opportunity for you to be in the pre-ministerial scholars program. And but even before then, I learned even more personally about Samford University through Pastor Irvin. His daughter attended Samford, but through his relationship with Dr. Robert Smith. Mm. At that point, he and Pastor Everett Kelly, who's also from Goodwater, and he later on hired me to serve on his staff as youth pastor, they attended the E.K. Bailey, at that point it was the International Expository Preaching Conference, and they became aware of Dr. Smith. And so guess what? My dad booked an interview, a meeting with me with Dr. Smith. Just to learn and know. He was like, you're talking about this guy. You know, he's got his book and all those kind of things. Yeah. And Dr. Smith, Ms. Val, was helping faculty and that kind of thing. It's like, you need to be talking to the undergraduate people. But Dr. Smith was in town, and he was like, well, I'll still speak with him and still make space to have a conversation with
him. Well, he's that kind of man.
He's just that kind of guy, I'm telling you.
All right. Was that a significant conversation? How was that?
He gave me a signed copy. And what I did not know was, you know, homiletical gold at that point. signed copy of Doctrine That Dances that I still have to this day. And he wrote a very moving message in there, so much so I'm sure he's forgotten it. Mm-hmm. But those words still are etched in my heart and in my memory. So yeah.
All right. So you finished up at Sanford undergrad. Did you go straight into Beeson?
Straight into Beeson. Straight into Beeson.
And what was that experience like for you?
Started Greek that summer.
Okay.
And let me tell you, that was such a humbling experience. You know, it's in the summer, so it's, you know, on steroids. You know, you're meeting every day, all day, and you've got to catch not only vocabulary, but you also got to catch, ways in which you're translating, you're putting together. In seminary, specifically in the biblical studies, I learned how much I did not know about the English language. I mean, it just humbles you.
Seminary will do that to you.
Seminary will do it to you. But in being able to see the power that is connected, not just simply with, you know, subjunctives and participles, but also being able to see ways in which that active and passive voice changes, not just simply in what it is that we say, but also looking at the epistles, the ways in which their actions that are responsible to the audience, but also their actions in which are acted upon them. So being able to distinctly distinguish that has just been invaluable. Because in that capacity, being able to, you know, and preaching is, you know, my thing that I love to study, but being able to convey and articulate. So that influences illustrations, ways in which applications connect together. So just being able to see it. So I came straight into seminary, had an amazing experience, learned a lot about the witness of the church. And I think one of the things that is stellar about the experience in here at Beeson is that when you learn, you constantly introduced to God's activity, not only in history, but also the ways in which there are some parallels in our contemporary setting and activity. But if you don't know that this has happened before, and also being able to know the appropriate responses of the church or a lack of response, we'll be standing on unstable ground because we need to either learn in order to replicate or learn in order that we may reproduce something that would be the most God-honoring thing appropriate for space, place, and time.
Yeah, that's good. Did you have a favorite teacher or two?
You know, I came to Beeson, I'm just going to be honest, for Robert Smith Jr.
Well,
I
came.
I just want you to know that. But I just greatly am impressed by the impact of Dr. Osvaldo Padilla. I took him for...
Yeah, you mentioned him in chapel today.
Yeah, Greek 3 and 4. So the New Testament text today, I hope I did not embarrass him. But also, Dr. Peter Mowish.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that I was coming to Beeson and would be as impacted by Dr. Mowish. There were just...
What was it about
him? There were just constant nuggets centered around ways in which to articulate in the History and Doctrine series that not only made it thought-provoking, but as we move towards the 20th century and modern theologies, we were looking at in that statement point then, the ways in which theology has always had a history of trying to answer the pertinent questions. So looking during that time, looking at ways in which you have the introduction. I knew about Rauschenbusch and the social gospel because of its somewhat connection with King. Yeah. But I would begin to ask questions in class and say, okay, yes, King learns this as he's up in seminary with Crozier. I was like, but how is it that we can ask the questions of the influence that he had living there on Sweet Auburn Avenue in Georgia? What did he learn it there? Did he learn? And so being able to have conversations with Dr. Mowish, walking up to his office, following him after class, you know, continuing the dialogue. And, you know, we try to keep in contact now, you know, as things are taking place and having questions. And Doug Webster, another homiletician who's here, just the way in which they offer themselves to us as students, not just simply to learn whatever the course objectives are, but being able to shape and hold our hands along the way in this theological exploration. You know, it reminds me of Voltaire's statement where cultivate your own garden.
Yeah.
So at Beeson, what happens is that we learn the witness of the church through history. And, you know, there are ways in which we can continue to expand that, but we learn the history of the church. But our faculty come alongside us.
Mm-hmm.
And they allow us over these years at Beeson to sit in their gardens.
Mm-hmm.
What tools are they using? What ways in which they've been influenced and informed? And so then when we receive the consecration and commencement exercises, it says, yes, you now go cultivate your own garden, but you've seen what droughts look like, what, you know, what tools have worked that we have had, and also some tools that we use that you probably will never use, but you know, if you ever get to the point in which they are available to you, you'll know how to use them. Yeah. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it just
makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that's what Beeson's all about. All right, in just a minute, I want to fast forward and ask about what the Lord's doing at Hutchinson.
Sure. Oh, gosh, we'd love to do that.
But we're talking about school.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't get enough of it.
You're off doing
a PhD now in preaching with our good friends at Truett Seminary, Baylor University.
Yeah.
Every one of them is a dear friend.
Yeah.
And most of them have been through preaching at Beeson and things like that. So what's that program like? How's God using it to shape you, even after all these years as a preacher?
I must say that my experience in the PhD program has just been life-changing. One key component of my experience there at in the program has been centered around these travel courses.
Mm-hmm.
And so with these travel courses, we've studied at Regent's Park, over at Oxford, so spent time, a little boy from Goodwater, over in Oxford. We did a class and that class was Elizabethan Victorian preaching. And so with that, got a chance to see Spurgeon's grave. So, you know, touted here under the Reformed tradition.
Got to go
to his grave. Also got a chance to see Tabernacle. So being able to see that and the frame of the work there. We also did a course in New England. So we were looking at New England preaching. I was introduced and was able to study of the Methodist preacher, Harry Hoosier.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, got a chance to do so. Being introduced to him and learning about his story, and then finally, I actually got to bring Waco to Birmingham. We did a civil rights and preaching course, and were able to look at the civil rights movement as a whole. I think one of the most beneficial aspects of the PhD for me has been, and this is what has been my aspiration throughout my academic experience and journey, is that I recognize that my tradition needs a few more people who continue to champion the tradition. Not necessarily to just merely look at it as a trophy, but also to stand and be critical of it, critically assess it, but also to bring to center names and voices that have been forgotten. I think of the work that one of our faculty members just recently did, Dr. Jared Alcantara's book on J.H. Jackson.
Yeah, and it's a great book.
It's a great book. People should get it and read it. But Jackson is one of the most formidable preachers in the 20th century.
In the world, the 20th century.
In the world.
But nobody talks about him.
Nobody talks about him. And so he does a great job, you know, go get the book. He does a great job talking about it. But it inspires me to be able to say there are voices, there are sermons, there are preachers that we've neglected. And we've neglected them because in some capacity, it has not been a priority. Mm-hmm. You know, they're competing priorities. You can only do so much. You can only write so much and all those kind of things. But this little boy from Goodwater, Alabama, is just convinced that God's greatest witness is still stories that have not been told. And so being able to see that, so I have a keen interest in looking at people, I'm a good Baptist, but good National Baptist Convention. So Elias Camp Mars, preacher out of Arkansas, Charles Thomas Walker, preacher out of Augusta, Georgia, and Nanny Helen Burroughs, who is out of D.C. area, preacher as well. But being able to see the way in which there's this delineation in the Black preaching tradition. It's more than you want to know, Dave. But there's this delineation and separation wherein which everything hinges on King. Oh. So, you know, and he's a pivotal person, prominent preacher. But there are some people that I've just become so enchanted by their stories coming out of Reconstruction as well as in the period of the Great Migration. Talk about Charles Thomas Walker out of Augusta, Georgia. And he is kind of postured as an accommodationist, as someone who did not desire during the Great Migration for people to move forward or go travel north. And he's kind of postured to say, hey, he wants to hold people back. He doesn't want them to flourish. But in actuality, as we look at him a little closer, he is building in Augusta, Georgia, a church that its steeple in its location serves as kind of the highest point in the city. And this is a Black Baptist congregation. So he's saying something.
Yeah.
Even if it's just merely in the structure of the building. Like I think about another Beeson alum, Dr. Otis Dion Culliver at the historic Tabernacle Baptist Church in Selma. And the construction of their sanctuary is it's a statement in stone.
It is.
and so it's constructed over 100 years ago in the thick of Jim Crow and segregation. But they posture their front door along the street of the main highway. A Black congregation, they are saying something. Mm-hmm. And so in doing that, What are these stories? Who are these preachers? What are the ways in which they are talking and moving? It's the craziest thing. Tabernacle and Hutchison have a history together. I don't think we got a chance to talk about this. I didn't find out until after my installation. One of my predecessors at Hutchison, Dr. George Washington Carver Richardson, say that three times, that's GWC Richardson. His installation sermon was done by the pastor at the time of Tabernacle Baptist Church. Nice. And then here in 2023, we come back and our congregations are reunited with Dr. Culliver doing my pastoral installation. So it's, you know, just seeing those stories. But he's serving at that time as the pastor of Tabernacle in the throes of the voters' rights movement that's taking place in Selma. Mm. So there's a prophetic edge. Yeah. And when I say prophetic, a willingness to gather together and explore and see in God's word the way in which, as Cleophas LaRue alludes in his Heart of Black Preaching, that God has a witness and a word, and he is on the side of his people, even the marginalized people.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's a great way to kind of get us up to the present.
Yeah, sure.
In your ministry in Montgomery.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you mentioned Dr. King. He was even younger than you are
he
now.
Was, yeah.
When he took the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery.
Yeah.
What's it like being a pastor of a big, prominent Baptist church in Montgomery? You could take it any. I mean, the church history teacher in me wants to ask all the history,
civil rights
history. What's it like stepping into that? But you could talk about it in other ways as well. What's going on at church these days?
Yeah.
And what are the challenges? What's the potential for the kind of ministry you have now?
Yeah. So it's crazy that you asked me this. Being a historian, and on this past Sunday, by the time this is recorded, we just celebrated 125 years as a congregation. So I thank you by God's grace. And we also burn a long-term debt as well. So now we're a debt-free congregation.
Nice.
You know, God is so gracious and good. But our congregation begins in 1900. And with that, the congregation is growing and decides to unite, centered around this specific Hutchison community that's in downtown. We are maybe three blocks from Dexter Avenue, King Memorial Baptist Church.
Just the other side of the interstate.
Not even the other side of the interstate. The other side of the interstate is Alabama State University, which is, but literally just up the road along Jackson Street there. We don't grow, but on Dexter Avenue downtown. But on Jackson Street, which is adjacent to our church, is where King's Parsonage is housed. Yeah. So I can stand in our church and see King's Parsonage. I can also, we're within a rock's throw of Alabama State University, which starts in Marion, like Sanford University. And, but also to tell you a little more about the history of our church had a pivotal role in the Montgomery bus boycott. The pastor at that time, Reverend H.H. Johnson, Reverend H.H. Johnson was participating with the other ministers and with King as well during the Montgomery Improvement Association. They were working there. And so we have pictures of H.H. Johnson and King and Nixon, E.D. Nixon and the crew. But the historical aspect of our church is that during the Montgomery bus boycott, our church was bombed one night because we have members who were participating in the movement. And so they were, I literally have a deacon right now, Deacon Adair and Deacon W.J. Williams, who's 101 years old.
Oh, my. they
were drivers during that time,
You
know, helping people get to work and move mm-hmm. along in the city.
People who were boycotting the buses.
Yes, boycotting the buses, yeah. And so they were getting the black community. This is before Uber and Lyft now. So there's no technology. People are having to come and say, this is where I'm trying to go, and they had to get them there. So our church has that history. But then also we have a way in which our church continues even beyond the movement. And we have members who participate in a few years later, the Montgomery to Selma March. So they help tell that story in varying capacities and roles. So at a historic church, I come there in 2023. You were there at the installation. thank you for your presence and sacrifice for being there with us. My posture for the congregation has been our desire is not to be bound and stand merely in reverence of our history. But what is God inviting us to now? My first sermon when I got to the church was out of 1 Kings 17, and the brook dried up. do we stay here in chair, or do we go to where it is, to Zarephath? It's dangerous over there now. You know, it's Sidon. It's the backyard of Jezebel. Mm. But if God says I've called you there and commissioned you, I'm going to take care of you. Being able to have that as so that was an invitation to the congregation, and I was like, oh goodness, they're not gonna want this kind of preaching. I ought to be able to be that pastor, and so we've recently just looked at ministries that are attached to kind of what's happening now. So we're right now in the throes of Black History Month, so we are creating space where in which we have this book exchange activity, where in which you bring a book, you can take a book to promote literacy. But these are books by Black authors, you know, as other things are transpiring in the world, where in which you're trying to silence the voice with entertaining ideas around, okay, what is a way that we can affirm for little Black boys and little Black girls in our community that Black is beautiful? It's not to say no one else is pretty or no one else is beautiful, sure. but an affirmation as a whole around that. And so seeing this as a gospel responsibility. And I say that as a gospel responsibility because truly we are image bearers of God. We've been made in the image of God. And so from our context, our skin is not sin. So what is a way in which Black is is beautiful, black is bold, but also serving in the context. I'm all for people who feel a passion towards multicultural churches, multi-ethnic churches. I really believe, Paul and Peter were called to serve God. Their capacities and functions were very different. And I'm just pro black church, black expression, not anti anyone. I just know that is the way in which God has called me and led me. I'm for everybody. I go preach at all kind of congregations, churches as a whole, but I do want to continue the history and the heritage and the legacy that has been so impactful for our communities through the black church tradition. And I long for the day. Dr. Smith would talk about the future condition focus, the eschaton. I long for the day for all of us to be gathered together around God's throne. And I'm going to stand there with whoever's next to me. but being able to see that this is in the words of Katie Geneva Cannon, for me, this is soul work. I must do the work that my soul must have. Yeah.
Well, it's wonderful, and we're glad you're doing it. In conclusion,
sure.
And with all these things in mind, how can our people be praying either for you, Pastor Thomas, or for our friends at the Hutchinson Missionary Baptist Church? This is a praying community.
Yeah.
We encourage our listeners to pray for our guests, even if they've never met them in the flesh.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm confident they're doing it. How should they be praying for you?
I would invite prayers centered around endurance. As much joy as I have, there is a burden that comes along with it. And not to save the world. My grandmother would tell me, you can't save the world. But just as much joy, because there is opposition that comes with learning history, telling history, but also desiring to work, and in most cases, evoke change. Mm. And so just as much joy comes with it, it's burdensome. And so being able to do that for our church, I would ask for prayer that we can be all that God has called us to be. Mm. I think so many times our churches, we become stagnant because we settle. Mm. We settle for good from God. Mm. When in actuality, we can experience better and the best of God. Yeah. So being able to do that. Yeah.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Dean.
Listeners, we have some things to pray about. Please pray for my friend, Pastor Cam Thomas, and the people of the Hutchinson Missionary Baptist Church in Montgomery. Thank you for tuning in. We love you. Please listen to Pastor Thomas's sermon. We'll provide a link when we drop the podcast episode. Thanks for tuning in. We say goodbye for now.
You've been listening to the Beeson Podcast, coming to you from the campus of Samford University. Our theme music is by Advent Birmingham. Our announcer is Mark Ginolette. Our engineer is Rob Willis. Our producer is Neil Embry. And our show host is Doug Sweeney. For more episodes and to subscribe, visit beesondivinity.com/podcast. You can also find the Beeson Podcast on iTunes, YouTube, and Spotify.